This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to State Senator Joe Simidian, who represents the Palo Alto area in Sacramento. Welcome back to California Politics Today.
Nice to be with you, Mark.
We're essentially doing a semi-postmortem here on SB 682, so why don't you tell the people who haven't been following the issue too closely what SB 682 would have done, and if it eventually passes, what it will do.
Well,
in its present form.
Senate Bill 682, which, by the way, is now Senate Bill 768,
all right.
Does three things. It deals with the issue of RFID, radio frequency identification devices, in government identity documents.
Okay.
It is that narrow but important slice of technology use that the bill addresses.
Doesn't say anything about hospitals, amusement parks, or anybody, or employers using RFID however they so choose.
No, we're looking at the unique but uniquely important issue of government identity documents. And there's a fundamental question behind the three things that the bill attempts to do. The fundamental question is, should state and local governments be requiring their residents to carry identity documents that broadcast personal information?
Right.
And I think that's the difficult question that the bill asks and tries to answer.
Go over real fast the three things it would do.
The three things we've done with the bill is to say, look, let's make sure that people are prohibited by law from skimming or reading remotely your personal information from an RFID document.
And this, when you say people, do you mean identity thieves or the government itself?
Well, identity thieves,
right,
for the most part,
okay,
is what we're talking about,
okay,
here. Then with respect to the government, we said, all right, if you're going to use this technology in a government identity card, let's make sure we have some basic privacy protections so that rather than putting your name and address and phone number, there's a unique identifier in the document itself. There's also encryption so that the information is coded in some way. There's also an authentication protocol so that there's essentially what you and I might call a password.
Right.
But basic privacy protection. So the first thing is no skimming or reading without permission. The second thing is let's use some basic privacy protections. And the third thing is let's hold off. There's a 3-year moratorium on using RFID in what I call mass distribution documents that the government might issue. What do I mean by that? I mean California driver's licenses, I mean health benefit cards, the kinds of thing that would frankly be hard to put the genie back in the bottle if we didn't address the underlying policy concerns about government tracking based on RFID technology, or turned out that our privacy protocols and protections weren't up to the task.
Okay, talking about general policy considerations, I was listening to Cass Sunstein on television yesterday pushing his new book about right-wing activist judges and how they're a bad idea, and he was talking about privacy concerns, which he feels it's within the grasp of the Bush administration to appoint members of the court who would severely compromise them as they now exist. What's the context in which you're operating here in terms of government intrusions into individual privacy?
Well, we're fortunately somewhat better off here in California than other parts of the country, because while privacy is often deemed to be implicit in the U.S. Constitution,
right,
it is not explicit as it is in the California Constitution. And in California, we have an explicit constitutional right to privacy that the voters themselves approved in a ballot measure now decades ago. I think that means that it's all the more appropriate for us to have some sort of statutory protection in place that says Californians will have privacy protections, that their privacy won't be compromised unduly by an inappropriate use of the technology.
So, in fact, there already is. It's a constitutional provision?
That's right. The California Constitution has a very explicit privacy protection. Now, what that means in terms of day-to-day operations,
right,
of course, is an open question and gets resolved on a case-by-case basis.
But essentially, you're bringing in SB 682, now 768, on the back of that constitutional principle. Essentially, you're trying to implement that principle in this instance with this,
right,
law.
And I would argue that California will have an even greater burden to bear, an even greater threshold, if you will, in terms of using RFID responsibly, because we have that protection in our Constitution that other states probably won't have.
Okay. Now, the bill, as you wrote it and it was amended and so on, passed the state Senate. Is that right?
Passed the state Senate, a healthy bipartisan vote. We had a 29-7 vote. Majority of Republican senators voted for the bill, as well as all of the Democrats who happened to be on the floor of the Senate that day when the bill came up. And we garnered tremendous editorial support around the state. I was really pleased Seven of the state's 10 largest newspapers weighed in, the L.A. Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Jose Mercury News, the Orange County Register, one of the more conservative papers in the state, Long Beach Press-Telegram, Oakland Tribune, Sacramento Bee, all of them said, hey, this is a legitimate concern. This is a measure that deserves approval by the legislature.
So, in fact, the public discussion that you wanted to have and that we tried to foster in our interviews actually did take place.
It did, and that was part of the goal. Obviously, the ultimate goal is to get a sensible piece of legislation on the books, but part of the goal was to begin a discussion. One of the challenges we faced is that this was, from everything we've been told, a sort of a first-of-its-kind in the nation piece of legislation, and that always means you get a tougher road to hoe.
Now, if you could concisely aggregate what all those editorials said, what was the thrust of those arguments in support of your bill?
I think fundamentally the critical consensus was the privacy concerns that have been raised by the sponsors of the legislation are real and legitimate. Some of the
Was that you weren't crying wolf.
That's right. And that was one of the reasons that I took my case to the papers. I thought, you know, this is, and it's one of the reasons why I've wanted to take time with you to make this case, this is an undeniably complex issue technically, and it's a somewhat sophisticated issue in terms of the underlying policy questions. I thought, let's take my case to the papers around the state, sit down with their editorial boards. I knew that they would, of course, then be in touch with industry opponents, and that industry opponents would bring all of the professional expertise and talent that they have to bear on the argument, and let's sort of let these folks serve as a judge, if you will, and let them weigh the merits.
Now, and since they declined to participate in this interview, the industry people, it's going to be up to you to paraphrase their arguments, but what was the case that they made against what you were doing,
their case shifted. Originally, their argument was that the problem was non-existent, that, in fact, these documents could only be read a matter of 3 to 6 inches away. A couple of things happened that made that argument a hard one to sustain. The United States State Department said, you know what, we are going to use RFID and passports, but we've been persuaded that the privacy concerns are legitimate, so we're going to wrap every one of these passports essentially in a metal shield called a Faraday cage by weaving metal threads into the cover of the back and the spine of a passport.
From their point of view, it was not just privacy, it was also security.
Well, that's right.
For people to go around broadcasting that they're Americans in some parts of the world may not be the most secure approach.
Exactly right. But the fact that the State Department, with all of its expertise on a national and international level, acknowledged the privacy and security concerns and took a fairly significant step in terms of putting a metal cage around your passport,
right.
I think that made it harder for opponents to sustain the argument.
So they changed their argument.
Well, and their argument did change, and it changed not only because of the State Department, but the Federal General Accounting Office, the GAO, also came out with a report in response to...
Now the Government Accountability Office.
That's it. It came out with a report to the members of Congress, and said, well, actually, it may be designed for 3 to 6 inch readability, but it can be read 20 feet away. The privacy concerns, said the GAO, are legitimate and listed them at some length. And I think that also made it harder and harder for opponents to sort of say this is a non-existent problem.
So in light of the evidence from the State Department and the GAO, what position did they take after that?
Well, I think it's a little hard for me to paraphrase
right.
the opponents, but I think their sort of second wave of arguments was the problem is overstated, the solution is too burdensome, and by the way, as long as we use a unique identifier, that ought to solve all the problems for anybody who's concerned.
And as you see it, and of course now you can speak for yourself, what was wrong with their arguments?
Well, what was wrong with the argument was that a unique identifier, of course, is not a solution to the problem, or at least it's not a complete solution to the problem. I mean, among the unique identifiers that most of us are familiar with is our Social Security number. If I said to you, you know, hey, Mark, why don't you just go ahead and give me your Social Security number right over the conversation that we're having right now, you'd say, not a chance. I'm not going to share that information. That may just, quote, be just a unique identifier, but we know that that is the access point, the gateway, to a whole host of other information about you, and it also means that even with a unique identifier, we can have cloning of cards so that someone could pass themselves off as you. We can have profiling and tracking of your habits. That the fact that a unique identifier is, quote, all that someone can get doesn't really assuage the concerns that proponents of my measure have put forward. And even if that was all you can get, if someone can then match that to information in a database, then all the information in that database is compromised.
Okay. So that these are the arguments as such. Let's talk about what actually happened. After it passed the Senate, it went to an Assembly Committee?
It went to an Assembly
Committee. Which committee in the Assembly?
It went to the Assembly Judiciary Committee.
Okay, and what happened there?
And it passed there 6-3. There were some amendments that were taken that produced the bill as I've just described it.
Right.
Unfortunately, it became a partisan issue there. It passed 6-3.
Which it hadn't been in the Senate.
That's right. And it and we have had good support on a bipartisan basis in terms of the various groups that support the measure. But in the Assembly Judiciary Committee, the vote split along party lines, 6-3, six Democrats voting aye, three Republicans voting no. And then the bill went to the Assembly Appropriations Committee.
But it passed out of the Judiciary Committee.
It passed out of the Judiciary Committee, and then it went to the Assembly Appropriations Committee. And
why did it have to go there? What was going to be appropriated here?
Because there were wherever there are potential financial impacts,
right.
A measure ends up taking a detour by way of the Assembly Appropriations Committee or the Senate Appropriations Committee.
It's a little like chutes and ladders there. Isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's quite a process. And that's where we got stuck just a couple of weeks ago now. Much to my surprise and disappointment, the bill did not come out of the Assembly Appropriations Committee, and the process there is a little bit different. If a bill goes on suspense, meaning that the chair has held the bill for review because of potential significant financial implications, then that list of bills that is on suspense, and it can be literally hundreds, is released or not released all on one day. And while there is a formal vote, if the chair chooses to hold a bill in committee, which is his or her prerogative.
Who was the chair of that committee?
In this case, it was Assemblymember Judy Chu.
Okay.
If the chair chooses to hold a bill in committee, then, which, as I say, is entirely his or her prerogative, then that bill is held. And much to my surprise, the formerly Senate Bill 682 was held in committee, and the chair indicated that it would be a two-year bill, meaning we could take it up again next year.
And it would start where it ended up?
And it would, and we would sort of pick it up where it sat, right there in the Assembly Appropriations Committee.
Now, how did it, I assume you didn't want it to go on the suspense calendar. Why did it?
Well,
whose decision was that?
The chair of the committee with her staff makes that determination, and it's a function of the extent to which there are deemed to be financial impacts. In this case, it's a little bit of a challenge to attach any specific financial implications because you're talking about what the costs would be if someone chose to use a technology which you are not requiring them to use. And if you followed that...
I didn't follow that. Because let's take the three parts. The first one says you can't skim. That makes a new crime, presumably, but it doesn't really require any additional expenditures, right?
All right, but then if, in fact, anyone is ever charged under that crime, and
someone has to
court
pay
costs,
for, okay.
And there are criminal justice costs, and there is potentially jail costs. So
right.
That's highly speculative, but...
So that's the source of the boilerplate language in these bills that say this creates a crime and therefore a local expense and
exactly
therefore
so.
Needs to be considered as...
Similarly, if we indicate that there are going to be privacy protections that are required for use of this technology in certain government identity documents, then the argument will go, well, that means that either there will be costs associated with that additional increment of privacy protection, or if people choose to use alternative technologies... as a result, then there'll be costs associated with those. So while it becomes quite speculative and is a bit more of an art than a science...
And in fact, it sounds under these kind of principles, if you can call them that, almost any bill needs to go to Appropriations Committee.
And that's why roughly 80% of the bills do.
Okay.
So the bill goes to Appropriations. Ultimately, the chair decides to put the bill on suspense. And then, unfortunately, as I say, when the day came to release bills from the suspense file, is the term we use.
Is that an all-or-nothing proposition you were saying? Or
well,
they can be released one by one?
They typically are, If they go to suspense, they go to suspense because they're deemed to be significant. Significant is, I think, over $150,000 or something along that line.
Right.
Which in a state the size of California is a pretty modest amount of money.
Right.
Then they are typically all released on one day or not. And
right.
In this case, unfortunately, we fell in the or not category. A couple of weeks ago when it was time to release bills from the suspense file.
Okay, so we've talked about the procedure here. What was the influence of the RFID industry that had opposed your arguments in getting this bill bottled up in committee?
Well, it's hard to know for sure. I think what I think happened is that there were some misunderstanding on the part of the committee staff about what the bill did or didn't do. I think certainly the opposition contributed to that misunderstanding. I think to the credit of the chair and her staff, when I approached them after the fact and said, you know, couldn't we sit down and talk about what it was that led to the bill being held, they were gracious and professional about that. We made our case. And ultimately, we reached a compromise, which wasn't a complete solution, but which was substantial progress, and that was that with the knowledge and consent and cooperation of the Assembly leadership, including the chair of the committee, Appropriations Committee, we were able to amend the provisions of this bill into a vehicle that was already on the Assembly floor. That unfortunately meant we did not have time to bring the bill up before the end of this year's session. But it also means that the bill is no longer stuck in committee. It is now out on the Assembly floor and eligible for a vote at any time.
So essentially you transplanted the substance of SB 682 into the body of SB 768.
That's right.
Which is now pending in the Appropriations Committee?
It's now pending on the floor of the State Assembly, and that was the important piece of progress.
Does that mean it doesn't have that it's out of the Appropriations Committee,
that's
but it's only out for
next year? It is out of
next
the Appropriations Committee. It does not have to go back to the Appropriations Committee. It can be taken up at any time on the floor of the Assembly.
Oh, and when's the Assembly next going to assemble?
Well, we will all be, as it happens, September the 8th was the last day of session this year. We will all be back in session in early January. I intend to use this time to continue to build support for the bill and to give the industry an opportunity once again to engage and try and find some meaningful common ground.
So in fact, it would be wrong to say that it didn't die in committee. It's been resurrected.
That's exactly right.
As SB 768, where it's now the next step in the process will be a vote on the floor of the Assembly, right?
You're absolutely right.
So it's in its transmogrified form, it has passed the Assembly Appropriations Committee.
That's correct.
But it can't be. But part of that compromise was it wouldn't be taken up on the floor until next session.
That's right, because there really wasn't. By the time we had a chance to jump through these various parliamentary hoops,
right.
There really wasn't an opportunity to bring the bill up in time with meaningful discussion. And I know that industry opposition has raised concerns among members of the Assembly that it's going to take time to address now.
Was it ever voted? What was SB 768 voted on in committee?
SB 768 was not voted on in the Appropriations Committee in its current form. As I say, with the consent of the Assembly leadership, including the chair of the Appropriations Committee, we simply amended new language into an existing bill.
What else does SB 768 include, if anything?
It does. It now looks exactly like SB 682 used to look.
It was a blank bill. What are those called? Blank bills?
No, it was. I think you're thinking of a spot bill.
Spot bill, so, right?
Actually, this bill dealt with a somewhat different topic previously,
and that's gone. Strike all language from beginning to
that's
end.
Right.
Put this in.
Exactly so.
Okay. Now the battle will go to the Assembly floor, and presumably the amount of political energy that isn't spent on the special election can be spent debating the issues around SB 768.
That's right.
Until January.
We're in recess between now and then, so this is not a time when it would be easy to engage the attention of members on a legislative matter. But once folks come back in January, there's really the rest of 19, excuse me, I'm a little
right.
misstated here.
It's okay.
The rest of 2006
okay.
To work on the bill.
Okay.
So we have a good long time to get the bill out of the California State Assembly, and we won't be under quite the deadline pressure that we were over these past few weeks.
Okay. Does this mean that RFID will be coming soon to a driver's license near me and you?
I think we don't know. I think that what we have accomplished this year, apart from moving sensible legislation, three quarters of the way through the process, is that we have forced a level of discussion and debate that previously did not exist on this topic in California in state and local government circles.
Now, what happens so often is technology moves faster than politics. Are there technological developments of any kind on the horizon here that might render some of these issues moot?
Well, I think that there certainly are technological developments that could help address some of the concerns. One of the major concerns, as we discussed previously on the show, is that this is a technology that puts you at risk without your knowledge.
Right.
If I mug you on the street, you know you've been mugged and you can take some action to protect your privacy,
right,
and prevent identity theft because you know that your documents have been lifted. If
right.
you are pickpocketed, you may not know it at the time, but you will know at the end of the day when you reach for your wallet, oh my gosh, it's gone.
But this is essentially virtual pickpocketing.
That's exactly what it is, and it means that you don't
makes
even
it possible. It
know that someone has lifted your information or is in a position to put it to use. So are there technological improvements? Yes. You know, I'm hoping that the industry will move to provide more than the very basic levels of privacy protection that typically are offered right now and that, in the view of many, myself included, are inadequate.
Is it too simple to assume that there might be a way that the card could be essentially turned off and not turned back
on?
No,
in fact, that technology is out there, and I think it offers significant potential. There is, of course, a cost to it, and that's always the stumbling block. You know, I've argued, actually, that if anything, I'm a friend of the industry. I'm someone who's trying to give them some opportunity to provide different additional privacy protections and to develop the technology further. Unfortunately, the industry hasn't always seen it that way. But no, I think this is all about who controls or has access to your personal information.
Right.
If it's in your control, that's one thing. If it is in somebody else's control, that's a very different thing, including when that somebody else is our state or local government.
So if the industry were to go back to the lab or make some decisions to say that they would build a RFID that has to be affirmatively turned on by the user in order to be readable by anyone, which I think we've agreed is technologically feasible.
Oh, it's out there now. There's no question about that.
And presumably with the drop in price, with quantity and progress in technology that always takes place, it might be cheaper by, I don't know if it would be cheaper by, significantly cheaper by an order of magnitude by January, but if they came to you and said that we'll accept a provision that says all these cards have to be switch on or switch offable, would that make a big impression on you?
It would certainly make a big impression on me. It would certainly produce a very different bill. You know, again, part of the question, as you've raised it, is, you know, how quickly could we get there and how quickly could we bring the cost down?
Right. Because I guess if you told them you'd buy 30 million of them, that would probably let them bring the cost down on the unit basis.
Well, in the meantime, what we've got is a group of folks who say we want to move this technology out into government identity documents without those protections.
Right.
And that is the problem.
Now, who in the state government as an elected or a bureaucrat can make that decision to put RFID on ID
cards?
Well,
interestingly, that issue has come up just within the last week when the state Senate rejected the governor's nominee for the head of the DMV, Ms. Baruchi, who ran afoul, frankly, of questions by our Senate Rules Committee about the implications of the Federal Real ID Act and what that might mean for California driver's licenses over the course of the next couple of years.
Well, could we talk about that a little bit? My next question was going to be about the fact that the governor has said he's going to veto SB 60, Senator Cedillo's bill to allow undocumented immigrants to have driver's licenses, because he said the Real ID Act specifications haven't been determined yet. And if I remember correctly, in our previous discussions, you've said that part of your mission here was to convince the federal government that unregulatable RFID on cards as a principle of meeting the specification for, quote, common machine-readable technology provided in the Real ID Act, that you wanted to send a message that that wouldn't be a good idea. But
That it certainly raises concerns and that those concerns have to be addressed.
Right.
I want to reiterate, Mark, what I've said before.
Right.
Look, I am not an opponent of the technology per se.
Right.
But any technology has appropriate applications and inappropriate applications, and any technology can be used wisely or it can be used unwisely. And my pitch from day one on this bill has been, let's use this technology where it is appropriate, let's use it in a way that is smart, and let's use it in a way that makes each one of us in charge of our own personal information, not simply leaving it out there for anyone to skim who has technology that's available for darn near next to nothing.
Okay, two things, though. Does the fact that the bill didn't get passed this year, is that going to encourage, in your view, the people at the federal level who might want to put RFID
do I wish I had a bill that was sitting on the governor's desk and, in fact, it was already signed? Of course I do.
Right.
But let's take a look at where we were just 6 months ago.
Okay.
6 months ago, the industry denied that there was a problem.
Right.
That is no longer a debatable issue. We've got confirmation from the U.S. Department of State by their actions. We've got the confirmation from the GAO, and we've got testimony now that has been heard and reviewed by folks at the state level in California that makes it clear there are legitimate privacy concerns that need to be addressed.
Okay, so you
beyond
have
that, yep. We've now got a vote not only of the California State Senate, but of the Judiciary Committee and the State Assembly, and we've got a bill on the floor that is ready for a vote that suggests, again, these are real and legitimate issues that need attention. And then we've got the public debate, not just the seven newspapers that have editorialized statewide, but your show and others who have taken this issue up. And I think we have played a significant role this year in forcing people to confront legitimate privacy concerns while still understanding that the technology has real potential if it's used in a way that's smart.
Right. So in fact, it's not an either-or kind of thing. You've essentially made 75% of your point, in a sense.
That's right. And I think what we've done is we've made it impossible to simply look the other way as we have this conversation in the future.
Okay.
And I think that is, to the extent that we've had a concern from the outset of this conversation about either state or local governments in California simply moving blindly ahead without any regard for privacy, I think we have made it much less likely that that will happen.
Okay,
that's gratifying.
Could you just say a little bit more about what happened with the DMV nominee and what the problem with the Real ID Act and how that impacts what we've been talking about for RFID?
Well, I think it is increasingly clear that we have a lot of work to do yet at both the state and national level in sorting out our views and our values about privacy protections and to what extent some of the suggestions increase or enhance our privacy and to what extent, frankly, they compromise it. And I think it's, here I'll sound like my opponents for a minute. I don't think it's a technology per se that is a question at issue. I think it's a question of how you use that technology. And I think at the national level, we know we're waiting for guidelines, as the governor has indicated. At the state level, I think we frankly have not yet begun to think through either the policy implications or the technological challenges of moving forward to comply with the Real ID Act, and we certainly haven't had that level of debate, discussion, and thoughtfulness when it comes to situations like we had in Sutter County, where you had a local school district who suddenly decided every kid in the school ought to be RFID tagged.
What did the DMV nominee want to do or say or had done that caused the problem?
Well, as I understand it, and I'm not a member of the Rules Committee where this conversation took place, it was more a lack of understanding or views about the potential privacy implications.
She hadn't listened to our shows.
That ran her aground in terms of the committee's deliberation and assessment. But these are these are big issues for California, and that was the reason that the Bill 682, now 768, suggested a 3-year moratorium. It was essentially a timeout to have this conversation, to wrap our arms around the problem and see if we could figure out a sensible solution.
Okay, so if it passes next session, then the moratorium will run to 2009.
That's right, and that's certainly something that we can adjust one way or the other if that's part of the debate. But as I said, the notion that we would end up moving forward in this area without a pretty careful assessment of what the technology can and can't do for us, what its strengths and vulnerabilities are, and really where we want to be as a state in protecting our residents' privacy as we move forward in producing a secure identity document, those are big and tough questions.
Okay, why don't we wrap up by getting your views on what could be done beyond what's already been done to facilitate even further the public discussion that you think so important here?
Well, I think that we have to have this conversation in a wider arena. I think the challenge with privacy discussions is that they tend to be a little abstract, and I think that it's incumbent on elected officials like myself to explain to people why these issues are real and have some impact on their daily lives. If you and I talk about a constitutional privacy protection, that's one thing. But if I ask somebody, do you really want to go to a protest rally or to the gun show at your local county fairgrounds and know that your personal information can be tracked by anyone with a reader who stands by the door, I get a startled look. And that's the kind of conversation that we need to have and we need to make public through shows like this, through greater discussion in the newspaper. As I say, my worry is that those conversations take place after we've already seen an unwise proliferation of the technology in a way that's not smart and that's not tailored to the use. That would be a shame because the cost and the potential implications is really pretty substantial.
I guess what I'm asking is it's great to have you talk about this on my show, but we're not a TV station in a major market that has an in-depth discussion of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering whether there's some way that the discussion could be escalated in some way that would make that happen more.
And that's what I hope to do with the 4 months that we have remaining. I'm hoping that the sponsors of the legislation, folks like the American Civil Liberties Union and the Privacy Clearinghouse and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, will take advantage of this time. Look, we've been given the time whether we want it or not. Let's use it wisely. Let's expand the conversation. Let's include folks who weren't there. I mean, the California PTA, interestingly, was one of the supporters of my bill. All right, let's engage them now, you know, at a local level and say, let's have the conversation about whether or not you really want your kids to be tracked every day at school in the same way that we would use RFID to track pallets of product or cattle out there in the pasture.
Well, there may almost be enough time to get some of those vaunted Hollywood / activists to put together an episode, if not a series, of some comedy or drama or procedural that highlights the dangers here. If not a full blown science fiction classic on the order of The Island.
And you're absolutely right. West Wing had a segment on driver's licenses not that long ago.
That's
actually.
Right. But I was thinking more along the lines of a play that would be set in a world in which everyone had these things hanging around their necks, and everywhere they went, the government knew where they were, and all the skimmers skimmed them, and there was no more privacy and no more integrity of the financial system and the political system. It degenerated.
And I think it's important that we not overreach, that we not overstate the case, that we not overdramatize. Look, I am pro-technology Silicon Valley legislator.
Right.
I grew up in a household where my mom was a programmer and analyst back in the late 50s and early 60s.
Right.
As you know, I was AEA, the American Electronics Association's high-tech legislator of the year a few years ago. I am pro-technology. I think the technology can work.
Well, of course, we have a character like you coming in towards the end to say we need to use appropriate technology, and that'll make it all work.
Well, I think I'll limit myself to just an appearance on your show for now.
Okay.
But, I think we can get to yes if people want to get to yes, and my hope is that this additional time will bring industry folks around to a conversation that, regrettably, we've not been able to engage them in thus far.
Except for here.
There we go.
Okay, thanks very much, and have a good time off there, and we'll get back together next year and see where things are going then.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.